Everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigak, and that was Pantera, Cowboys from Hell. Love me some Pantera. And now it is time to talk to Michael, and more importantly, to talk to all of you guys about what has been going on in our branch. We're kind of limited in the updates we can give, but before that, go ahead and say hello.
Hi, everyone.
All right, good deal. So we have positive things are happening with the investigators from National Headquarters. They have shown up, and as we record this, they have now done their work of investigation, and we'll see.
They're not done yet.
No, that's not. You're right. Because they still had, like, they ran out of time here, and they mm-hmm. wound up, or they're going to have to do phone interviews to finish the rest of it. But the business agent did, in fact, send people to investigate what's going on at the branch, to investigate all four sets of charges. At first, just like what happened initially, they thought they were only here to investigate one set of charges. And then they brought Michael in and basically describe how that came.
Well, when they brought it in, I said, are we here for that one charge, or are we here for all the charges? And they're like, what do you mean all the charges? We're only here for one charge. And so I go, but I have an email from our national business agent says that you're doing all charges.
Right.
And they're like, oh, we didn't get that email.
Yeah.
So yeah. There's a lot of confusion.
There was confusion. And the good news is it did get squared away. And so Michael and I, and probably a number of other people, wound up getting interviewed twice mm-hmm. by the investigators for yep. the various charges that are going on. And they asked specifically that we not talk about their investigation on the podcast until it's complete, because they don't want us like feeding answers to people who might be listening to the podcast that they still have to interview.
Right.
And that's totally reasonable. I got no problem with that. But I will say in broad strokes that I have been impressed with the investigators. They seem very thorough and, most importantly, impartial.
Yes.
And man, did we need that.
Yes. We definitely needed impartial because it's the good old boys that Corey always talks about. They always right. have their people always. Because here's the thing. Our bylaws and our constitution says that it is the president's duty to pick the committee.
Right.
So what happens when the charge against the president?
Then the vice president picks the committee, and we saw that happen. And I think that the committee that was picked at the meeting, I think they would have been fair. I think they would have been a good committee.
From what I hear, the committee chair was for our president.
Well, that may be. But regardless, they got dismissed, and mm-hmm. these people have come in, and not only do they seem impartial, but again, very thorough. They're doing a much more thorough investigation yes. than would have been done by just random people from the branch. So that's good.
The impartial thing is where we wanted and we got, and that's what we, that's
right.
what's great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so that's happening. Now we are really trying to get as many people as possible to come out to the next branch meeting, which is on March 5th. Yeah. At 7 p.m. at the Union Hall, 2620 Sunset Road, across from Sunset Park. But the investigators have so much documentation to go through that they said that they may not finish in time for that meeting. So we're saying come out to the meeting anyway.
To see what's going on.
Yeah.
Because there's still going to be some stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there will definitely be things that we have to discuss, things that we have to vote on, and they may be finished with the charges by then, and we'll vote on those as well. And I'm saying everybody come out. Like I said on a previous episode, if all 1,500 members of the branch come out, that's fantastic.
Right.
You know, and that way the will of the branch is served, and that's what it's all about.
Right.
You guys are all members of your various branches. And you deserve to have a voice in the way your branches run.
Just quick, something that I was thought about real quick mm-hmm. is that when I first became a CCA and became a steward as a CCA, I was one of the first CCAs. I was one of the first stewards. Mm-hmm. Okay, but anyway, when I got the roster for all of our seniority list, mm-hmm. you know, we had over 2,000 people on the roster at the time.
Wow. Yeah, so I don't pay attention close enough to know like how many members the branch actually has.
These were active people, not retirees.
Right, people actually carrying.
We actually had over 2,000 people.
Dude,
We're down now. We're down to
1,500 or 1,300 or whatever it is.
No, yeah. Active carries. We're down to about 1,000.
Dude.
Yeah, what happened?
I don't know. I can't speak to those numbers. I wasn't paying attention back then. You know, I just clock in, do my work, and go home. I mean, definitely mail volume is down, but the size of the valley has increased since then. We've added, you know, at least 500,000 people probably since you got hired.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, my route's 8 hours. That's and I know Michael's route is 8 hours.
Yeah.
So that you can't really complain about that part of it.
Yeah, you know, I'm changing the subject here.
No, that's fine.
At my station, I filed a lot of 271Gs, and since I've been there, I think...
For a special route inspection. Yeah.
So before I arrived at my station, I think we lost like 20 routes at my station.
Wow.
We had a supervisor come in and thought that he's going to go through and just clean house and merge a bunch of routes, and we lost a lot of routes. And it's so many that people that was at my station had to go to another station.
Okay? Wow.
And, but ever since I have been in, I think I've created probably at least a dozen routes now.
Dude, that's great.
So Clawing we're getting back what we lost, you know, but there's still a lot more needed because there's a lot of routes we still got that is overburdened. But again, some of those carriers that's overburdened routes, they only want to work their own route and said they don't want to put it to 271G.
You know, I had that happen. When I took over my previous route, 2150, it was a park and loop route and it was long. Nobody wanted it because it was long. It was in a decent neighborhood. And it was about 45 minutes over. Mm-hmm. And so the problem was the carriers who were on those routes, and carriers, if you're on an overburdened route, listen up. Because those carriers who were on those routes would get pressured by management to get done in 8. And they would skip their lunch. They would skip their breaks. They wouldn't do route maintenance. You know, they would do the things they needed to do to try to get done in 8 hours. And when I came in, thanks to education, I knew that, hey, I don't have to do that. I can work the route at my own pace, whatever pace I'm comfortable. And if it's over, management has to adjust the route to me. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. And people kept telling me, oh, you got to get a 271G. And I'm like, dude, I'm fine working 45 minutes overtime every day. I don't need my route adjusted. But eventually the route did get adjusted and they took about 45 minutes off. And that now it's a much more desirable route.
And here's the thing is, I know people want that extra overtime, but do you really want to have to argue with management every day?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's say you got to the point where you get along with the manager. So now you have some people like the T6 or when you're on vacation with all the CCAs opting on your route, and they have to fight management on that because of your overburdened route. And then you wonder why no CCAs or anybody want to opt on your route.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why.
Yeah, it's funny because now, like, my route is 8 hours, but it's one of the few, like, all walking routes. And CCAs don't want to opt on it just because they don't want to do all that walking. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's true. It is a disservice to the station in general to have these overburdened routes. Because if you have, you know, just to make the numbers easy, if you have 8 routes that are all overburdened by an hour, that's a whole other route. And there should be another full-time carrier, another person who is employed.
So with all the overburdened routes that we got, you know, let's say they all get 271G and create 6 to 10 more routes, right? Yeah. And that means we're going to have 6 to 10 more carriers at the station. That means there'll be more people taking annual.
Right, another spot of annual.
And so that doesn't mean that you'll never get overtime because those people are going on an annual or all those sick leaves.
Right.
And that's what the CCAs and overtime carriers are supposed to cover, not because the route is overburdened.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, so I feel like the 271G is a very important process that most people have forgotten. And M39 actually literally says that management is supposed to make all routes 8 hours.
Right, right. And that's part of their regular, like their own version of maintenance is that they're supposed to be checking in and seeing what routes are over, what routes are short, and then making minor territory adjustments to compensate.
So one of the biggest problems that we went through in Las Vegas is that the management is only allowed to have 15% of CCAs compared to the active carriers.
Okay.
So if there's 1,000, then we're supposed to only have 150 CCAs, right?
Sure.
You know, we haven't hired a single CCA since April of last year.
Good news on that.
We just hired a couple batches,
but we went a long time
without any CCAs because management got in trouble because they were over 15%.
Okay? Yeah.
And how many managers are complaining? Oh, we don't have enough CCA, so now we're working people into penalty overtime because we don't have enough people.
Right, or mandatory overtime or things like that.
Right. But technically, if all the routes were 8 hours, that wouldn't be a problem.
Right. Yeah. You know, these are the things that, like, I had an episode of the Postal Standup recently where I talked about falsifying scans, where management tells you to just like scan something as business closed or no access just to clear the scan. And the problem with that is that it creates this illusion that your station is fully staffed and that you don't need any extra help because everything's getting delivered every day. You know, we got the same problem with our weekly ads at my station. Dude, I'm going to have to call the Office of Inspector General at some point because the ads come in on Tuesday, and because they're non-preferential, we could deliver them Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. And then I come in on Friday and there's still like 10 routes that still have ads. And then I come in on Saturday and there's still 6 routes that still have ads. And oh, it gets worse because then on Monday, none of the routes have ads anymore. But if you go out onto the dock and look into those big recycling hampers, that's where those ads wound up. And it's not carriers putting it in there, because carriers could get fired for that, and rightly so. Well, I won't say rightly, but whatever. It's, you know, it's a fireable offense. But management is actually instructing one of our clerks to just throw the ads into the UBA.
Now, again, that is not a carrier's fault.
No, it is not.
That is carrier. Management's responsibility.
Absolutely.
And but if the ad was just sitting around, carriers need to fill out that cartel form.
Right, the 1571. Yes. Absolutely. Okay. So that there's a paper trail that, hey, right, I told management I have these ads. Mm-hmm. Management isn't, you know, doing their responsibility, right, making sure they go out.
And I think I've always said it to the cover your ass thing. Right. To see ya.
Yeah.
And that is part of the covering your ass, because if it comes down, unless the post inspector comes in and sees all these ads thrown away in the blue recycle bin, and then who are they going to try to blame? The management.
Oh, of course. They'll blame it on the carrier. Yeah, no question.
And then you have to find a way to try to protect yourself. Okay. The best way to do it is if you have a 1571 that says, hey, I notify management that I still have it.
That's it. Yep. That's exactly right.
And the 96 where management says, don't take it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You fill out your 3996. You say, I need an extra 45 minutes of overtime to take these ads. Management denies your 3996, instructs you to curtail the ads. Now it's all on management, right? You have to protect yourself in that way.
So always cover your ass. But if you did a 271G on your route and your route is 8 hours.
Right. Then you should have time to take
Tuesday,
them.
On Tuesday, when the adverts are supposed to go out, usually is the slowest day.
Right.
You would have plenty of time to deliver the advos.
Right. Do you go back? Have you been with the post office long enough to remember the RJs?
Yes.
Oh, dude. Yeah. So we used to have a second set of ads. And I know I hear from people in other communities where they've got like 4 sets of ads that go out every week. They got like the Nifty Nickel and the Penny Saver and all that stuff. And yeah, man, I'm glad those days are behind. Yeah.
But here's where most people don't understand. Okay. That is being paid by a company for us to deliver.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It's mail.
That brings mail money into the post office.
Absolutely.
Okay. So no matter how much we dislike it, it is money coming into the post office.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't like it because we're getting extra 45 minutes, an hour over because of advos, because your route is overburdened, it's kind of on you.
Well, and again, that's where we should be getting these 271G special inspections and getting bodies added to the station.
Yeah, and the thing is, management will allow you not to take the advos because you're on the overtime list or wherever. Mm-hmm. They want you to, you know, not take the advos so you can do it fast as possible so you can do other people's routes. Right. And so all these overburdened routes are, you know, doing that. But the carriers that that actually puts in for the advos and so forth and will do the things correctly, those are the ones where they'll have the overtime guys do those with the advos because somebody was doing their things correctly.
Right. Yeah.
So then you get angry because you're doing somebody else's job.
It's a mess. I'm sure you've experienced this when you were CCAs. Like you come in on Tuesday, whatever route they stick you on, you do the ads on Tuesday. Then they put you on another route on Wednesday. You do the ads on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then the third route you do in 3 days out of the
week. In a row. And then the CCA is like, come on, this is BS. Yeah,
dude, that was one of the things that I looked forward to most when I made regular. But then I became a T6 and I still had kind of the same problem.
Right.
The regular would be like, oh, I'm off tomorrow. Alan can deliver my ads.
Right.
But man, once you get your own route, oh, dude, it's so nice. Mm-hmm. You deliver them and then they're gone.
Right.
And that's it. And I'll do sometimes our ads will be spread on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take a couple of bundles out on Monday just to make things easier on Tuesday. And dude, it's so nice.
And here's the thing too, is if your route is 8 hours and you're a sign up for overtime, you know, you're always doing your routes in 8 hours. So just go and do somebody else's route for an hour or two, and still you're still going to get overtime.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the overtime carriers typically, I mean, it varies from station to station, but typically overtime carriers get the hours that they want. You know, as a CCA, that's one of the reasons that it's so nice to opt on a route, to get that opt hold down, because it's like being a regular, where you know if you deliver the ads on that day, you're going to be on the route again the next day, and you only have to deliver them once. Add it to the list of reasons why you should always opt on routes.
Right. Yeah, it's and it and the CCAs, they don't like taking routes that is overburdened.
Of course.
And the reason for it is not, it's not the fact that the route is overburdened. It's that management is telling them that route is done in 8 hours and lying to them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay?
Even though the carrier drops an hour every day, but to a CCA they say, oh no, this is an 8 hour route, and right. And the CCAs know better, especially the ones that's been around for a while. And they're like, this is BS. They're lying to us or whatever. But because a lot of them don't know how to fill out a 96 correctly.
Yeah, it's true.
And so they try to run. And then what happens when they run?
Then they get injured. They make mistakes. Yeah. They open themselves up to all kinds of discipline.
And the safety violations.
Right.
And get 16-7. And then they lose a day of work or whatever it is. And
yeah, it's a mess.
Problems.
Yep. Yeah. I've talked about that with the CCAs at my station. Like, I see them delivering park and loop like it's an over-the-curb delivery, where they drive up to in front of the house, then they'll hop out of the truck, run up to the house, put the mail in the box, run back to the truck, drive up to the next house. And they think they're saving themselves time, but they're only hurting themselves, because there's no way that you can do that quicker than park and loop without cutting corners on safety, without, you know, never putting your seatbelt on or curbing the wheels or all that stuff. If you do everything properly, including like locking up the truck, there's no way that's faster. And right. So they're doing this in service to management for a bullshit number that, you know, management's telling them they have to get done in 8, which is not true. Mm-hmm. And they're only harming themselves. Because if management comes out and they sees the carrier and they see the carrier cutting all those corners, they're not going to go and pat that carrier on the back and be like, oh, thank you for going out of your way to get this done faster. That carrier is going to get disciplined.
Right. So those are the problems that needs to be issued.
Right.
And could be fixed.
That's why this education and empowerment, this is why we do it. Because you need to know, you know, what you're doing to yourself, what your rights are. And it's tough as a CCA, because if management feels like you're sandbagging, they can wind up cutting your hours and then you're boned.
So back in the last year, before we went to the convention, and one of the members, friends that called me up and said, hey, you know, you may want to talk to Alan. And like, Alan has the same point of view as you do. And I said, oh,
this is before we met?
Before we met.
Oh, yeah,
so sure. In reality, I've only known Alan for less than a year.
Yeah, okay? That's true.
And so I've known him. I've seen his, you know, bald head in front of me a few times.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't know him like I do now.
Right.
And but when I talked to him and he had the same point of view as I do, you know, then I asked him to run as executive vice president. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, no, I like the training better. And he went to run as the VP. So that's how he became a VP, you know, running for VP. But he told me that he was doing podcasts and doing the training.
Right.
Okay. And then he, you know, asked me to, hey, you should come on and be my guest. And talk about the stuff. And I'm going, sure. You know, this was something that I was thinking maybe I should do myself, but never, you know, took the steps.
That's it. I had this in my mind for a long time before I finally took the steps, you know, got a microphone and got myself in a position where I could actually do it. Because I had no idea how to take a podcast from a recording on my computer and turn it into something that people could download. It turns out it's really easy. It's so easy, even I could do it.
So when he asked me to be on there as a guest, and I think we've done pretty well.
Yeah.
And then also going to the national convention, that helped a lot.
It did. We learned a lot.
We got to meet a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely.
And that helped a lot. And that also got, you know, Alan's podcast, The Class is Male, to be bigger than what it was before that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Having that exposure there, meeting all those people, interviewing all those people was fantastic.
Yeah.
And guys, you've heard Michael on the show and you've heard how good he is. He's come so far, because I remember like when I was doing the postal stand-up, And I said, hey, Michael, why don't you go ahead and just record an episode and send it to me? And guys, it was unusable. and so, and now, man, I think you're more popular on my podcast than I am. Every time you're on, people are like, man, Michael does such a good job.
It's because I get emotional.
Yeah, you do. You get fired up. Uh-huh. And you're so much more knowledgeable in terms of like nuts and bolts with the contract. Because I'm still pretty new to being a steward and doing contract enforcement. And yeah, Michael has that experience.
Yeah. And again, so, you know, it is our opinions and it is something that we've seen that you know, we're talking about. And so, you know, that's the reason why I'm doing stuff for Alan, you know, because it's for training purposes, informational purposes. And as long as I think we're helping carriers, then I have no problem doing this for Alan.
Yeah, it's that democratization of information. We're tired of people gatekeeping this information and trying to keep people out. And dude, you're such a good example of that because with all your experience, with all your skill, with all the grievances you filed and how great they are, Branch won't send you to formal A training.
No. Well, here's the thing is our previous president, Glenn, who passed away, which has been now just over a year, and him and I talked, and we shook hands, because him and I had some arguments, you know, which I think everybody should, because if you disagree with something, you shouldn't just hold it in. You're supposed to talk to the other people and say, hey, I don't like what's going on. And so I brought that up to Glenn a few times, and of course, he probably didn't like some of the stuff I said and so forth. But anyway, we shook hands, and we kind of said, hey, let bygones be bygones. So we agreed that he was going to put me in Formula A. Okay. And then when he passed away, and then the new president, he has this thing against me for whatever reason, ever since he became an EVP. So he took an opinion of me because other people told him how I am, which is confrontational.
Yeah, I'll grant that. You are confrontational. But dude, again, that's something you want in a steward. Yeah. You need your stewards to be confrontational because if they're passive, management walks all over them.
Right, right. Yeah. Because you see, the person like I am is a lot of people have seen at my station. When management does something wrong, I speak out. They'll tell me to be quiet. You know what my reply to when management says to be quiet?
What's that?
You're violating my First Amendment of freedom of speech.
Yeah, and we're all gathered here at this stand-up, so you're violating our freedom of assembly too.
Yeah, and you know what the funniest part is? They're like, no, I'm giving you instructions. I said no because the Elm says I can work quietly and diligently. And as long as not silently.
Right.
And I said, if I'm causing a problem at the station, I said, and look around to the other kid, hey guys, am I causing any problems? They're like, hell no, you know?
Dude, that's awesome. And that's the kind of empowerment that we're looking for. Yeah. You know, when you know, like management tries this all over the country, the golden hour, where you're supposed to just be completely silent, case your route. And when you know your rights and you know that the M41 says quietly and it does not say silently, now you're empowered to push back against management. And that's what it's all about.
So I have a story on this.
Okay, go for it.
So I had a supervisor who told me to be quiet. Okay. Now, you know, I mean, I was talking to another kid, but working though.
Yeah.
I'm working and talking. But this supervisor thought she'd be empowered to tell me to be quiet. And so I said, okay. I started talking about the contract, joint statement of violence, freedom of speech. You know, I was quoting all that stuff,
right?
And then she goes, Michael, I'm giving you instruction. I go, you can't give me something to violate my constitution. And I just kept going and going and going, quietly, diligently, and working at the same time,
right?
So she's getting frustrated, right? Because she doesn't know how to get at me. The
instruction of like turn around and face your case. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll grant him that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm still talking.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, shut up is not...
Yeah. And so she's getting frustrated. And this is a very abusive supervisor. As she has been... Got many, many joint and violence violations. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this is before she got a final settlement from the Step B saying that any more harassment, she will be fired from the Postal Service.
Wow.
That's how big this was. But anyway, it's the same manager. And so anyway, she got so frustrated, she runs over to the station manager. And the station manager comes up to me to tell me what? To be quiet.
Yeah.
Stop talking.
Oh,
and then,
boy.
And I do the same thing to him.
Right.
Okay. And you know what he tells me finally?
What's that?
Clock out and go home.
So this is where you need that strong union steward to take up for you and file that grievance and aggressively make sure that you get paid for the rest of the day and you don't get disciplined.
Right.
And that's why, you know, we're all in this together and we need aggressive stewards who are willing to file and fight.
So you know what I did after I clocked out?
Tell me.
I went straight down to the hall to file grievance.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, that's it.
And Glenn, he asked me, Michael, what are you doing here? I go, oh, they just told me to leave and go home. Is it a 16-7? No, I don't think so. They never told me it was a 16-7.
Right, right.
So Glenn's like,
well, were you a regular at the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's like, so what's going on here? I'm like, I don't know. And so Glenn goes, you know what? Let me call the station, find out.
Right.
So he did.
Okay.
And told him, say, hey, Michael's down here filing a grievance on you. What's going on? And then our station manager goes, well, we tell Michael that we're going to give him admin leave because we need a time off from him.
Dude, that's a good way to earn a day off.
So, and then Glenn came over and said, hey, Michael, I don't think you need to file that grievance because we're just going to give you admin leave.
There you go. It's settled.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that is like the role of a steward is to try to solve these things before they become a grievance.
Right.
You know, that's how I finally stopped the 4-hour violations, the 4-hour guarantee violations at my station is I called management out. And I would, you know, when a CCA was going to be sent home and they hadn't hit 4 hours yet, they come to me first and then we both go up to the supervisor and I say, are you sure you want them to clock out? Because I'm going to file a grievance and they're going to get their 4 hours. And then they, oh, well, all right, we'll just have them work. And then eventually it stops becoming an issue.
Now, what most people don't realize is, yeah, my management could have came back to me saying I didn't follow instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to give me a letter of warning, whatever it is they're going to try to do.
They could have tried to issue discipline.
But it's going
to
be hard for them to say, well, I told him to be quiet because he was telling us that we're violating Constitution or violating freedom of speech and so forth.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to
I've do always that. Been in favor of telling management when they're violating the contract. You know, if they're going to mandate me and force me to work overtime off my assignment, I'm on work assignment. And I know that they have overtime carriers who aren't going to work up to 12 hours. I let them know. Hey, just so you know, you're violating the contract here because, like, dude, the other day we had a bunch of call-ins or whatever it was. And so management decided that they were going to mandate and they do it in the morning and they mandate pretty much everybody. And we start at 8:00. So 12 hours would have the overtime carrier should be working until 8:30 p.m. if they're going to work their full 12 hours plus lunch. And then out on the street, we get a mass text message from management on our scanners that says we need everybody back and off the clock by 7 p.m. And so there's no way that they're working the overtime carriers up to the 12-hour limit, which makes every single mandate improper, and they're doing it blatantly. You know, like there's not even an attempt to maximize the overtime carriers before mandating.
Well, I have an answer to that.
Go for it.
Well, if you're not done and that was the last instruction received, bring the
back. Well, yeah, of course you come back. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's correct. But what I'm saying is like this is a more than just the normal. Like sometimes management will mandate people because there's just not enough bodies, you know, and those the contract provides for that. Mm-hmm. The contract will allow management to do that. Like if everybody there's this backfire type of protest where everybody in your station gets off the overtime list. And all you've really done is just given management carte blanche to mandate people because now they have to.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have overtime carriers available and they still mandate, that's inappropriate. And to me, this is where things like escalated remedies are warranted because they're not even paying lip service to the contract at that point. They are openly and egregiously and intentionally violating the contract.
Well, here's the thing, too, is if people get off the overtime list and they just have the CCAs, but if all the routes are 8 hours, then there shouldn't be any problem.
Yeah, well, there is that, too. Yeah, that is a very good point.
Well, I just wanted to just say one more thing on this matter is all the stuff that I'm talking about, like maybe not listening to management saying be quiet or whatever.
Right.
That is something that I did and possibly getting myself in trouble. So
yeah, you've got to be prepared.
You got to know how to fight it and things like that. That helps a lot. The management knew that I know how to fight this.
Right. Okay? That you actually know what your rights are. And that's the empowering part of this podcast, or it's supposed to be.
So because I knew how to fight this, management knew how I fight this.
But
the only thing they could at that time was just to, you know, make it look like they're removing me for the day.
Right. Make an example out of it.
Yeah, except everybody found out that it was an ambulance. Like, what the heck, you know? But I don't want to, I'm not telling everybody to do this, okay?
No, no. And let me ask you this before we move on to our last topic. Mm-hmm. What would you say to a CCA who's not on an opt? Mm-hmm. You know, how pushy should they be?
Well, so because of retaliation by management and our union failing to protect the CCAs, unfortunately, he still got to follow whatever most of what management says.
Yeah.
Okay. And because our union and our branches have failed to protect you guys, and I've done everything I can as a steward, but unfortunately, when you don't have protection from the branch and national. Well,
and there's not a contractual protection, right? That's the real issue.
Yeah. And especially the CCAs who are still under probation. They made it so that we can't protect you, so...
Well, no, we can file grievances on them. We just can't file a grievance on them being removed.
Right.
Yep.
So, actually, there is. It's just our branch and our national, I think, is not helping so much because management still is supposed to follow the process of how to get the CCAs trained.
Right, right.
And they're removing them because they didn't train them properly, and then removing them is bogus.
I agree.
That is something that we used to fight for that we stopped doing. Okay. And so there's a lot of things that needs to be done. But I mean, the biggest way is this new contract to get rid of CCAs and be PTF. So no matter what, they'll be fought for.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And this whole thing with the, and of like even PTS where they can't file grievances for a certain amount of time. Why would they agree to any of that when they're a union paying member?
Michael, I have to push back on that because, again, whether you're in your probation or not, you're subject to every part of the contract except being fired.
Okay.
But like if you are a PTF or a CCA and you're in your probation and management sends you home after 1 hour, you can file the grievance and get paid your guarantee.
But they
even
have
when you're on probation.
But what does the branch always say? I need a statement from that person.
Dude, it's proved out right on the clock rings for that one.
Okay. Yeah. And then they're so scared, what happens?
They don't want to file because
right.
And this is right. This is that problem. Mm-hmm. You know, they're told the same message. Keep your head down for the whole 90 days. Don't do anything to make waves. Mm-hmm. Just get through your 90 days. Right. And that's reasonable. And when I was in the academy, I told people the same thing. You know, that management has a lot of control over your schedule. And so until you get into a more empowered position, you kind of got to dance with them.
Yeah, there's a grievance we can file for all these CCAs, especially still on probation.
Mm-hmm.
But because it is still an at-will state in most of the states, management can still let you go within that time. And there's nothing that we can do about it as a union because there's nothing in the contract that says that we can protect them on that.
It's tough, yeah. It's a tough thing to do. And yeah, it sucks. Hopefully that gets addressed in future contracts. I don't have a lot of hope for it in this one, except that maybe we'll eliminate the CCA position.
Right.
Who knows? The new and improved, the new look Brian Renfro is, you know, allegedly working on that.
So talking about freedom of speech.
Okay? Yes.
So we got I looked at the newsletter from this current one that's come out.
Right.
And
our branch newsletter, technically our state
newsletter. Our state newsletter, yep. Where our new EVP talks about how we didn't have a Christmas party and how we're lying about what we said about the Christmas party.
Yes, we've talked about this on previous episodes of Classes of Mail, how our branch just didn't have a Christmas party this year. And it seemed like nobody took the steps necessary for that to happen. Well, we know nobody took the steps necessary for it to happen because the proof is that it didn't happen.
Right. So here's the thing is, you know, we were talking about opinion and what we thought was happening. So, there is no proof on what we were talking about.
Well, you can't prove that somebody didn't do something.
Right. The only proof is we didn't have a Christmas party.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So basically the newsletter talks about how we were lying on that, which I don't know how we were lying. We were just talking about opinion.
Yeah. Well, and point to the lie.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is where that democratization of information is so important because we have... The people who are in office now have this bully pulpit where they can send this newsletter out to everybody in the branch and they can write in there whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is at least the third issue of our state newsletter that talks trash about podcasts.
Right. And Alan, you're good with writing, right?
I am. Yeah, I'm fairly good at it.
Maybe you should start writing the newsletter.
Yeah. I probably should.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should probably start trying to
get I'm not the best at writing, but I know Alan is.
Yeah, that is one of my strengths.
Yeah.
And so, Yeah, you're probably right. Yes. Yeah, I probably should.
And Leslie is very good at
it, too. Dude, add it to the list of crap that I'm doing. Dude, so today,
it's sorry.
What President's Day is, we record this.
Yeah.
And I had to get up early today because I had an interview at 7 a.m., which you guys will have already heard by the time this comes out, with the folks out of New York City who are running for office. And then I got to take the dog for a walk. I got to get her exercise. I got to take care of chores around the house. And then I'm finally like sitting down to relax. I'm going to play a video game. And then I got a text from Mike like, hey, I'm still going to be there at 10:30. And I'm like, fuck, I forgot that he was even coming over. So I got to reset up all my podcast stuff. And yeah, it turns out this has taken up a good chunk of my free time.
And then mine too.
Yeah, and yours too. And then we got to deal with all the union bullshit. They're like, now I have to write an appeal to the National Committee on Appeals.
You're right.
Over Michael's and my discipline, because we don't know whether the business agent can step in and overturn because the branch convicted us.
Right.
And so we don't know.
Yeah. So I, you know, I talked to LMRDA.
Okay.
OLMS.
Yep.
Lawyer or government official. Mm-hmm. What our union did with that vote was illegal.
Yeah. Yeah, of course it is. It's an absolute violation of labor law and of NALC policy.
Yes.
And, you know, so what's to be done
about
it?
You know what she told me?
What's that?
You need to sue your union.
Yeah, right. In federal civil court, yeah, you have to actually sue them. And, dude, hey, pro tip,
I don't want to do that.
No, I don't either. Mm-hmm. But pro tip, the on the Department of Labor website, it talks about the union member rights and things like that and what the Department of Labor does to protect you. And it specifically says on there that issues stemming from the union member's Bill of Rights can only be enforced in federal civil court.
Mm-hmm.
They don't enforce those things. So, yeah, we're on our own if we want to sue the branch. And there's not a lot of money in it. And so lawyers aren't super interested in taking that case. And even if there is money in it, do we want to take that money from our branch? You know, like when I wrote my letter to Renfro about it, I said I would much rather have you step in and address this. And dude, that's one of the messed up things.
No, it's actually, there could be a lot of money involved in it.
There could be. But again, like we're taking that money from our branch.
It's just, we just need to get a right lawyer if we wanted it. Right. I'm just not looking right now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. I would much rather just have it get addressed.
Yeah. I'd just rather have this whole thing be done with the national and everything.
Dude, the whole idea that we were even prosecuted at that meeting is a violation of Renfro's presidential ruling, because he specifically said that the business agent was going to come in, take over the charges, extend the timelines, and then the branch went ahead with our charges anyway.
In
direct defiance of Renfro's ruling.
Yes.
Dude. And so, and now like what that stands, I don't know. And so because the branch did vote, now we don't know if the business agent can just take it over.
Well,
so we got to send our appeal to
National. Well, we do, in the fact that we did vote on how to punish us.
Yeah.
And using a 5-person committee that is not from our branch.
Yeah, that's true.
And so Keisha did a 3-person committee that was not from our branch. So I don't know how that works. But so that could be, you know, in play.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. So there's a lot of things.
I would rather have the conviction overturned. I mean, I know it's kind of a distinction without a difference.
Yeah.
Because if the committee comes back and says, no, you can't do anything about this because it would violate the law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess that's good enough. It would save me some writing.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing to add on that about that, where it's a civil matter.
Yeah.
The other thing is the OLMS also said that our union violated the rights of what I have, and they could step in and themselves to redo the election.
Well, I mean, that's ultimately what, the election will be redone one way or the other. We're still fighting over the nominations.
Mm-hmm. Well, dude. So the remember our person that we charged against our election chair for not doing his job.
Right.
He wanted us to be gone from the union for 6 months.
Right.
Okay. That right there is also in violation, because he's using the union
to prevent us from being able to run for office.
And it was a civil matter. It actually says that's a civil matter.
Sure, sure.
Okay? Not a union matter.
Okay. Well,
and so
don't get too far into this because, again, the investigators asked us to play it cool.
Yeah.
All right. So look, we've been rambling long enough. We're coming up on the 40-minute mark. That's probably enough for now. So we're going to go ahead and regroup, get ready for the next episode that we'll be recording. And you guys, thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you all next time.